We are live. Welcome to Uncommon. I'm here with today's special guest. Please help me in welcoming the one, the only, Brian Sharp, a.k.a. Hotep Jesus. Better not even ask him how he got the name by this point.
Oh, no. Nah, hell no. Please do not. Please do not.
So, Brian Sharp, a.k.a. Hotep Jesus here. He was actually one of the first people, one of the first 20 people to come on my podcast. And he was kind enough to do it back then, kind enough to do it now. And when I asked him what he wanted to talk about, he just told me not to ask him why he was called Hotep Jesus and to figure it out for myself. So I made sure I knew before I came into the conversation. But since that time, I followed very closely the career of this dude. And the reason for that is because I have been incredibly impressed by his ability to build a community and to step into a leadership role within that community, and then to build himself into the kind of man who is fitting to be standing in that role and to be able to reflect upon his own needs for development and growth, and then to step into the paths that allow him to do that. And that's why I wanted to bring him back on the podcast. So with that sort of rambling and not very detailed introduction, bro, welcome back. And why don't you fill him in on anything else you want to tell him?
Interesting way that you introduced me. I'm humbled and I appreciate that. Not sure what to make of it all, but, you know, as a marketer, you know, I tell people about the brand, you know, branding. You know, I talk about branding a lot and I teach branding. And I always tell people your brand is whatever people say it is, right? Because you may put one image out on the internet and then people come back and say, well, you look like a pompous asshole, or you look like, you know, a king or a god, right? So it's very interesting to see, you know, how people describe me, because it's like how I'm being perceived. And it's like you have one mission and one goal on how you want to be perceived. And then people just come back with something completely different, right? So, for a while, I didn't quite pay attention to how I wanted to be perceived. I just wanted to be perceived, right? It was like, hey, I'm right here, you know, give me some attention, right? I deserve some attention. And then I think a lot of that was garnered through humor, right? I was telling a lot of jokes and whatnot. And then people started describing me as a comedian. And I'm just like, I ain't no comedian. Like, I'm a very serious guy, you know, and I want to be. Some people, I noticed this one thing, I do these broadcasts and I've published 3 books, and, you know, several times people have said to me, you know, after watching one of my broadcasts, like, I didn't know you were so intelligent, you know, I didn't know you were so intellectual, like, wow, you have a wealth of information. I'm like, what the hell did you think I was, Chris Rock or something? Like, you know, what did you think of me prior to that? And so that's why I started like paying more attention to, you know, how much fun I have online, because I don't want to be taken as a joke and I want to be taken seriously. And so that's why now you see the daily content coming out, very high intellectual, big brain stuff. The motivation behind the daily thing is I'm in a group of extraordinary gentlemen. Donovan Sharp, Coach EO, BOA, Minister Jab. And these guys are publishing content like daily. And, you know, they say when you're, you know, you become, you know, the 5 people that are closest to you or something like that, right? So being around all these YouTube stars, you know, you just start questioning, like, should I be doing this more? And then for a while, I was like, nah, just, you know, whenever I feel like it, I'll get on the internet and show people my voice. Then there's like this necessity where people are constantly asking for my opinion on things. But, you know, Minister Jap especially was like, yo, Hotep, come on, man. Like, it's 2022 coming, man. We, you know, pump out that content. It's time to really get going. And I'm like, all right, man, screw it, I'm down. You know, because it's like you're part of this club, right? And you don't want to be, you know, out of the club when you're in the club. Like, you don't want to be that, you know, that guy that doesn't fit in, so to speak, right? You want to perform at the level of these other guys. So it's sort of like a friend. I wouldn't even say it's competitive, but it's just you know, you push each other, right? So they're like, yo, Hotep, you got a lot to say. We love what you got to say, you know, pump out that content. And one thing they said that really registered with me, they said the people need it. And I was like, damn, you're right. Right? Like, I was like, damn.
Duty.
Like, yeah, it's like you have that duty to the people, you know, when God gives you these gifts, when your parents give you these gifts, when DNA gives you these gifts, gifts are meant to be shared.
So, hold up, man. I got a slogan, a dumb slogan that just popped into my head.
Okay.
If you don't step up to your duty, you're going to step in some duty.
I like that one. I might steal that from one of my daily emailers.
That's, you're welcome to it. It's open source.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right, man. They said, hey, people need you. So I stepped up to the plate and people have responded generously and are appreciating the daily content. So, and I think it kind of gives me a new daily focus. Prior to that, my daily focus was just getting my daily emailer out. And then after that, it was just like, you know, working on some of my tech projects or some of my pet projects. You know, I'm heavy into chess now. So studying chess and trying to get better at chess. So it's kind of given me, also it's sharpened me, you know, keeps me up to date on things. So when I'm talking about things, I'm a little bit more educated. So it's fun, man, you know, being on YouTube and being active. You know, I started out on YouTube years ago under a different moniker, super like pro black, like borderline black nationalist, man. And really my motivation for being on YouTube was I had some things I wanted to tell the world, right? That just didn't work in tweets. So the first spark was I was an anonymous account. After I left Twitter and I came back, I turned myself into an anonymous account after like a 6 month break, and then people didn't know who I was. And somebody challenged me. They were like, yo, why don't you get on YouTube? And I think they were just saying that because I was an anonymous account and they thought I was some fat white guy in the basement. Because I'm talking about black things, right? So like, are you even black? So I took the YouTube, and then after that, it was just like, okay, I have things I want to tell the world. One of them was college is a scam, right? So my college is a scam video went viral and got a lot of attention. But then after a while, it was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I have nothing else I want to tell the world. There was nothing else left for me to say. I said everything I've wanted to say. And then I left, and it kind of turned my channel stagnant because I had grown it to, I don't know, maybe 30,000 subscribers or something like that in a pretty short amount of time. So then I come back and I'm no longer like this black nationalist. So now my old subscribers when I was a black nationalist are mad at me and inactive. So now I have this account with 50,000 subscribers, but probably only 20,000 of them are active. So it's a weird place to be, you know, especially when you look at my numbers. It's like I'm really a small account. But I had said everything I wanted to say. And then I just moved into the space where decoding the world for people, right? Because before it was just like, here are my ideas on certain things of society. And then it turned into, well, I can decode society on a daily basis, the different events that happen, so on and so forth, and decode it for people and give them my opinion and how I view things. So that's kind of like what I do now.
You know, you said a bunch there. And one of the things I want to circle back to is what you finished up on, because one of the things I really like about your commentary is that you actually go and take a look at the things that you're talking about in real time and go, what am I talking about? Let's go look. And but I think I want to come back to that after a second, because you said something. I want to use you as a mirror for a second. You said you are what you're perceived as, your brand is. I'm perceived as a lot of strange things. But lately I've been perceived as like a a far right white nationalist, or like a conspiracy theorist, or various degrees of crazy people. And because of some associations I had with a now infamous author, I've got all kinds of other kinds of crazy people just coming into my life. you know, I know who I am, but yeah. I'm kind of a weird dude, and people have found it very difficult to categorize me. What do you think I should make out of all of that?
Well, let's start with what you are. You weird as shit. And that's not a bad thing.
That's fair.
It's not a bad thing. I mean, what's the opposite of weird? Normal? Normal to have you triple jabbed up listening to Dr. Fausti.
Yeah, that's right.
Normal to have you walking around here double masked up. You know what I'm saying? So is normal better? Nah, I kind of like that you're weird. I mean, you and I have worked together in the past. Car chat, whatever. You remember those?
Yeah, of course I do. I was actually going to bring that up.
Yeah. I like weird people. When I was younger, I remember Jonesy said this about me. He said, yo, you know, back in high school, I was a ladies guy, right? But he was like, back in high school, you know, if I wanted to, I could have hung with the in crowd, and I didn't. I hung with, like, you know, lesser popular people, I would say, you know, people a little bit weird, a little bit different, a little bit geeky. But it's just the only difference was I just had I was a geek. I was a nerd, but I had swag. You know, I still had style. I still had charisma. I had these things, but I was a nerd and a geek at heart. You know what I mean? But he said I could have hung with the in crowd. I could have been with all the rest of the cool kids and jocks, and I chose not to. And because I saw the fraudulence in it. I saw how fake everybody was in high school to be a part of the in crowd, right? This person, you'd see him in the hallway talking to this person, and then somebody comes around and they're like, oh, wait, go away. Don't, I can't be seen with you. Like, little stuff like that, you know? It's like, ew, like... You know, I hung with my group of friends. They might have been a little quirky and weird, but I loved them to death. And they inspired me in various ways in my life intellectually. And that's really what I dug, you know, people that were into content that I was into. So, you know, I was never really a type of person that would change who I am just to fit in with the cool kids, right? And be normal and whatnot. So when you say you're weird, and people perceive you, I think it's a good thing. If people can't label you, that's also a good thing in some ways. At some point, how old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay. I had to think about that. I know what that's like. I would say your entrepreneurship journey is pretty young, but at some point you'll start to sharpen or focus what you are into a single point, and then people will say the same thing about you over and over again, and it'll be a little bit more targeted. You know what I'm saying? It comes with time. It comes with practice. Sometimes it's out of your control. But listen to what people are saying and go towards what they're saying, right? Like, if it's a certain type of weird, go towards that and try to be more of what you like of what they say, and use that to sort of shape your brand. But if people are saying a whole bunch of different things about you, that means you're throwing out a whole bunch of different types of messages. And there's nothing wrong with that. But at some point you want to pick one and keep hitting on that same button. But you're like me. You're very dynamic. You can be in many different genres at the same time, right? You can bounce from talk about this subject to that subject. You know, you can be funny, goofy, serious. You know, you're just a dynamic person. You have a dynamic personality, and you're just into, you view the world different from other people. You view the world from a very zoomed out perspective. You're not so caught up in the things of the daily happenings that it controls your life. You know, so you are very much the watcher of your own self. You're conscious of yourself. You're conscious of the things you do. You're conscious of the other things you do. And you're continually trying to make yourself better.
Yeah, that's true. That's about right. That's a good. It's pretty good summation of a lot of things about me, for sure. Kind of You know, you said earlier you were kind of flattered about the things that I said about you. That's kind of flattering for me. Those are the things I want to be noticed for
dope.
Having a bird's eye view and for thinking, you know, I know he's not necessarily one of your favorite characters, but he said something to me one time, which I thought was exactly what I was going for specifically with him. And Jack Posobiec said to me, I like coming on your podcast because you give me these flanking thoughts that I don't expect. And then I have to answer them.
Mm.
And that's what I'm going for. Why do you say
I have a problem with Jack? I got a problem with Jack.
Well, you know.
Jack's cool.
Yeah, Jack's Jack. Yeah. You know, he's doing what he does.
Yeah, he's doing what he does, man. Yeah, getting yeah, okay. Money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know, the point stands, and he's a smart guy. He's figured out how to get a lot of money.
Sure. But, yeah.
But that was the whole point I was trying to get with him and with people who have a significant, let's say, like a very large following where they're used to talking to a lot of people. They're used to hearing a lot of the same things. Like you just talked about with me, maybe trying to hone in on my message. The people who have a very large following are the people who have done that very successfully is what I've noticed. And when you try to get them off of that message, interesting things happen. And sometimes I have failed. Sometimes I've tried really hard to get people off of their message and they just joust me. And it's usually lawyers who are able to just like, nah, man, I see what you're doing and next time. But sometimes they see what I'm doing and they're like, okay, I've talked to 50 radio DJs. Maybe I'll just talk to you and have an actual conversation and see how that goes for once. Mm. And that's what I'm kind of trying to do with you too here right now, specifically too, because I know just how many times you get the same questions and the same things over and over again. And I really want to open up more of who you are and what you're really doing, because I do see things from this bird's eye view. And I think it's really beneficial. I'll just say something and then I'm going to kick it back to you, which is I've been doing a lot of studying on ancient peoples and their legends because of a project I'm working on where I'm doing a lot of writing, just like daily writing, tying in all these myths into a wider thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that just keeps popping up is people used to live their lives according to cycles, and they celebrated these cycles, and they built everything in their society around these cycles, the sun and the moon and the harvest and the equinoxes and the solstices. And they lived in a ceremonial landscape where everything around them was a sign and was divine and was personified in a sense by the divine. And it was very easy for them to find meaning within their world because the world was literally aligned to the directions and the sun and the clockworks, and everything about their lives was synchronous with that. And now we have all this chaos. And, you know, I'm very susceptible to the chaos of the signals because I have this fascination. I really want to know so much about everything that it's like, ooh, look at this, ooh, look at this. But, you know, I dive deep, but I might dive deep and have 20 tabs up and read them all and then sit back for an hour and think about how do these things connect to each other. And what I find is that, like, it's a challenge. It's like my challenge to figure out how to communicate all, you know, all of that stuff into something that makes sense to somebody in a tweet or in a paragraph or in a short essay or in a conversation where I can bring it up to them real time. And so that's what I'm trying to do with you right now is say, like, I see this part of you that I can, that can only be seen from this bird's eye view. And I really want people to see what I can see about you. And what I'm trying to close in on and like trying to zoom in and maybe you can help me is like, you've really stepped into this leadership role. And I mean that in the sense, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, where you're doing what you got to do to be the leader instead of being fraudulent. And, you know, you have the whole grifties thing, which I have a bone to pick with you about that. But, but, you know, like part of your brand is, hey, man, look at these people who are stepping into these leadership roles and don't deserve to be there or just doing it for the money. Maybe they even deserve to be there, but they're still doing it specifically and expressly for the money.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, maybe I'm doing that too. I don't know. There's a little tongue in cheek with you about that, but you're also saying I'm also going to earn it. And I want you to maybe talk about that, bro, because it's important.
I've avoided the leadership role for a really long time. First of all, I was a natural born leader, and tried to deny it for most of my life. because I wanted to be equal. I didn't want people to perceive me as better than them. A lot of it came back to the fact that I felt guilty for being a rich kid, you know, and I wasn't rich, but I was definitely upper middle class. Both of my parents made six figures. We had the nicest house on the block. And I had cousins who, you know, lived in the ghetto and went through things that I could never imagine it trying to experience, right? Or having experience. So I had a lot of guilt built up for being raised privileged. You know, you talk about white privilege. I'm like, man, I don't know, but I know I had some privilege because of the parents I had. And I felt guilty because there were some people, friends, etc., who didn't have a dad. Right. And I had the most amazing dad I could ask for. I mean, super masculine, could fix anything. You know, we used to call him MacGyver. You know, MacGyver would take a lighter and a piece of gum and turn that shit into C4 somehow.
Yes, so, sir.
You know, we I used to call my dad MacGyver because he could just, you know, he's just great with, you know, fixing things and whatnot. He was an electrician. So he was former military, and he taught me a lot about consciousness and just life, period, and how to be a man. And so many people didn't have that in their lives. So I felt guilty when I ran into people. I would even like try not to show I was rich, you know, or having money, or try not to talk about the good things in my life. I'd come around friends and I'd talk about the bad things happening in my life just to make them feel better. You know, because I noticed that when I talked about the good things, their posture would change, right? And they kind of don't want to hear it because their life isn't going too well. And then something hit me. What happened was I was avoiding being a leader because I hated dependence. I hated that people were so dependent upon others. And I didn't want people to have a dependence upon me. I still don't like people having a dependence on me. If I see somebody who is too dependent on me, I'll snap. Like, I get really angry and like, yo, go figure it out on your own. Like, go do that. You know, like, you didn't even try to search this before you called me. You know what I mean? You didn't even try to do this before you called me. You just said, yo, I got Hotep Jesus in my corner. Let him call. Let me call him. And even though it's something I could have helped him out in 2 seconds, it's like, you don't have no respect for yourself. You got no respect for me because you didn't take time to go and learn this, right? Or check this out. I remember one time this chick unfollowed me on Twitter because she was like, yo, how do I start investing? So I told her, just start. I was like, yo, just start. And she got mad at me. And I'm like, you can't ask me a question like how to start investing. Like, that's a Google question. That's a YouTube question. Like, you know, it'd be different if you came to me and you said, yo, I just started investing. And do you think I should do individual stocks or ETFs? Right. And then it's like, oh, OK, here's somebody who has shown that they've done a little bit of work and started up and looked into things. And now they're coming to me. Or you could say, what resources do you have that I should check on? I'd be like, yo, you want to do invest in Benjamin Graham, intelligent investor. Boom. Get started right there. Right. And that would have been different. But to say, you know, how do I start investing is completely disrespectful to my time and your own. You didn't even try. But anyway, I hated people that were dependent upon me. But then something happened. I noticed people were imitating me, especially young people. They were copying me and they were acting like me. And then that's when I realized my responsibility, my duty. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, if I'm creating little clones of me and they're imitating me at my worst. You know, because like I said, I joke and, you know, make off color jokes and, you know, all types of just, you know, wild trolling behavior. I started creating little trolls, right? Like, people just started trolling the internet. And I'm just like, wait, like, you can't troll like me, first of all, because my troll has like levels of intelligence you can't reach. Yeah. You know, but then I was like, all right. If you're going to copy me, you're going to copy the best version of me. So I have to be the best version of myself, which means that I have to make yesterday's version of myself obsolete and I have to keep upgrading my software. So it's just about continually being a better version of myself, trying to discipline myself to do the things that are really going to make me better and people around me better. And then going from there, man. But it was that. It was when I saw I was creating little clones. I was like, oh no, I have to do something about this. If we're going to create clones, let's create people who make this world a better place.
Man, there's a lot I really resonate with in there. And
okay.
A mutual friend of ours, Billy Redhorse.
Yeah.
I just love that guy.
Yeah, he's cool as hell.
He's always he's always stepping into my DMs and just when I'm behaving with poor manners, you know, I have a particularly crass sense of humor from time to time, and he'll say something like, I just barely unmuted you and then you tweeted this and now I have to put you back on mute. or you know, like I'm wasting one of my 66 like followers people. On you. Yeah, man, you know. Yeah. But he's been a really great influence on me because he reminds me that there is that duty, and it's more about a duty to yourself, I think, from my vantage point, because I'm kind of like you in the sense that you just talked about, where I look at myself and I realize I'm having some sort of feedback loop with the community that I've built. And obviously, you know, I don't have a giant community, but what I really do have is I have a community of people who are very impactful in the world, who I have something to do with. And so that means that I do actually have a very large community that I'm influencing indirectly. And that's actually specifically what I've been trying to do, is to maneuver myself into that position. So I'm very happy with that. And now I'm in the position where it's like, well, what do I do with this? And part of the deal is I'm a jester at heart, big time.
Yeah.
But I'm also very serious about the world. I love the world, you know, and I want it to be better. And I'm going through this process right now, sort of a metamorphosis, where I'm trying to do is basically like, I've created a bunch of alternate personas where I express different versions of my personality as those characters. And then I'm trying to sort of consolidate what I'm expressing myself as Chance Lunsford as, because I want to be able to connect with people who are serious individuals in a serious way, because I'm a smart guy with some specific talents that people, like a lot of people, don't have. And I need to be able to say that I did what I needed to do to be able to give the best of myself to the world with no reservations. Like, you know, I really could have done better if only I would have done this. I can't have that in my life, because you said earlier, I take a look at myself, right? I'm reflective, and it's big time, bro. I look in the mirror and I see all the flaws and I see all the mistakes and I see all the things I've done, because I've lived a very dark life in the past. I had to go through that process to be here now. And so I go through that process every day, and I can't live the kind of life where I say I didn't do what I saw was the right thing in order to do the thing that I thought was most important, the best that I could do. And so I'm looking to people like you, because you're doing it more successfully than me, and you're more practiced than me. And, you have something that I don't have, which is, there are only going to be certain kinds of people who connect to me. And a lot of times it's people like you, because you can, because you're a smart guy. And I'm not saying that to be pretentious, but I'm just like, I'm only putting out a certain level of content. I'm not putting out just like cheap idioms to catch your attention. You know, I'm trying to think. I guess I'm wondering, like, in that frame of conversation where I'm a person who's asking you for advice now, and I've done my own research, and, you know, I know who I am and I know who you are, and maybe it's an opportunity for you to reflect and come up with some advice for yourself while you're on it, you know.
Two things. ROI, right, and the feedback loop we want to talk about, okay? Just in case I forget, because sometimes my mind gets loopy.
Sure.
So the feedback loop is dangerous. The best tweets are the ones that don't get engagement. It's like some of the most intellectual material won't be consumed by the majority of people. Most of them won't even be able to understand it if you handed it to them, right? So the best content is often the ones that doesn't get the most engagement. However, there's something that can't be measured by likes and retweets, and that's called impact, or impression, the impression that you leave upon people, right? And connection. It might not get all of the engagement, but the people that do engage glue to you more. They respect you more. They take you, they look at you differently. And even though it might not get the likes and retweets, people still see it. Okay. And it's still in their subconscious mind. And it's still going to leave an impression in their mind of who you are, the type of person you are, whether they retweeted it, liked it or not. They saw it and they have an impression of you based upon whatever tweet you put out there. So the feedback loop is dangerous because there's a certain type of content that gets a lot of engagement, and usually it's low quality content, the jokes and trolling and et cetera, which leads us to ROI. What's the ROI on that content, the trolling content and the funny content? You know, you can have a serious tweet and that'll connect you with, you know, some fancy lawyer or some fancy doctor or a banker or something like that, right? Who does the trolling connect you to? It connects you to the common individual, the average person, the plebs, right? It's not what you need to rise the ranks of society. You need a network of robust individuals, accomplished individuals. So when you speak, you have to speak like you're in a room and speaking to these individuals. And the more individuals you have like that in your network, the more powerful you become. You're not powerful with a whole bunch of hoi polloi, because the hoi polloi turn on you the moment you say something they don't like. Intellectuals question and say, hey, why'd you say that? I'm not sure if I agree, but let's discuss, right? Or to be in the back of their mind, the hoi polloi just, they respond with rage. I don't agree with that. Like today I said, there was no such thing as Black history. And of course,
you know, I saw that. Yeah.
So people of course can be upset because I'm shattering a certain reality which has been created for them. But the intellectual would say, hey, what do you mean by that? They're going to ask for more, right? Ask for more information. They're going to inquire. So you got to think about our ROI. After I tweet this, what could I potentially get out of this? What could come back? And if you look at it like that, a lot of the thoughts that you might share, you won't share, because you know, sometimes it could lose you followers, it could piss people off, you know, and that's just not good for the bottom line. It's good for the fleeting moment, but it's not good for longevity. And we gotta practice longevity. You know, when we look at somebody like China, who was a backward society, agrarian society, who rose the ranks of the world in less than 100 years to become a world power after being at the bottom. I mean, Japan was doing better than them. The island of Japan was doing better than them, and they've surpassed everyone. Why? Because they said, we're going to focus on manufacturing shoes. Something as simple as that, right? The longevity and the thought to know, what is it in the world that all people need? So they started in the textile industry. So clothing, shoes, you know, like all of our stuff, see, manufacturing became huge. And that's why they got the sweatshops over there. And half the 90% of the products in Walmart is produced in China, because they thought long term and said, we're going to set up shop here. And in the future, we're going to be a powerhouse because nobody else is focusing on this. Everybody's focusing on luxury goods, right? Like cars and spaceships, and that only a few elite can even purchase. But everyone needs shoes. Let's focus there. And you look now, and all the electronics is produced there in Japan and South Korea, et cetera. And they've done really well for themselves. So think about the ROI and think long term and say, ah, this might be cool for the moment, but what's this going to do for me 10 years down the line?
There's a thing that popped into my head while you were talking. I kind of have these, I'm kind of a visionary thinker in the sense that I see visually. And there's this phrase, I heard it first from a seminar I went to, but he took it from somewhere else. And it's the idea that when you're delivering a message, there are no empty seats. And if you imagine, like if you imagine an audience, let's say that I want to speak to 1,000 movers and shakers in the world. I imagine there's an auditorium with 1,000 seats in it. And on my Twitter, I might have 3 of the people or 100 of the people or whatever that I want in that room that see that message that I have intended for them. But if I craft that message well, the 3 or the 100 that saw it, that message, like you just talked about, it sticks in their head, and maybe they amplify it a little bit. Maybe they add a little bit of their own momentum and energy to that message because they identify with it. And then there's now 8 people, or there's now 120 people in those seats. And if I continue to speak to those 1,000 seats and I continue to dive in on that message, eventually those 1,000 seats are going to be filled, not by just the spirit of the message that I'm delivering, but by the actual people who were meant to sit in those seats so that I can deliver that message to 1,000 people. And then once I hit that 1,000 people, I realize that there's actually 10,000 seats out there in that stadium. It's not an auditorium. And you know, so the process goes on. And you said something to me one time on Twitter, and I was talking, you were saying something like self-help is weak. And it was more about like trying to, I think, steer the conversation away from the passe idea of like sort of bitch ass self-help, where you don't actually help yourself. You just read a book and go, oh, I read, you know, whatever. Yeah. Now I feel better about myself. But I guess, given all that I just said to you about the no empty seats and honing the message, and then also the idea of, to me, that's sort of meaningful self-help in a sense, or like self-improvement is you pick a thing you want to go for, and then you keep trying to do that thing, and then admitting the mistakes that you made, because that's the key to unlocking the new knowledge that you need to get to the next level. And then once you accomplish that thing, you realize it was only just a step on the road. And now you have like this amazing other vision that you couldn't even see until you got to the top of this hill. You realize, oh, there's a whole other mountain over there. I just got to kind of take it easy on the dip here, and then I'm going to have to work my ass off for a minute. And I guess I didn't really successfully land that anywhere, but there's something for you to chew on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the whole self-help thing, like self-help Twitter, I have a love-hate relationship with it, because it just seems to me like one big grift. And most of the people in there just, they have theoretical knowledge and not real life practical experience. And so, you know, all day, you know, even money Twitter, like all day, they're just tweeting about, hey, money, money, money. And here's how you get the money, and come get the money and get better and do this and do that. And I'm just like, y'all are boring me to death. Like, y'all corny. Like, it's just corny, you know, that it's even corny to me that people need that. But some people actually need that. They need that reminder, I guess. Right. Yeah. Yeah. As someone who's never needed that reminder, I can't consume that type of content. Like, it disturbs me, because it gives me a different perspective, and one that's lower than the one that I have. Right. Like I'm thinking like way out in fucking Jupiter, and these people are thinking on Earth. Right. And then I might pick up something that they said and think like, I'm not adequate because I'm not following what this guy on money Twitter said. Right. Where we start measuring ourselves by the amount of income we have. And that's not a good measure. Right. It's a measure of success, but the things that some people would do for money, like if we measure ourselves by money, then you just might as well say the OnlyFans girls are elite people. They're not. Right.
Yeah, hard disagree.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe like, some of them, the elite of them, maybe, you know, the top 0.1%, maybe.
And then like what people do for money, right? Like when I think about what people do for money, I think of it as, how are you changing the world, right? Like I the guys that do the Amazon shit, right? I look at them like, you guys are just plebs. Like, you guys are just fucking moving, you know, product that's already been marketed and just placing it on the market and upping the price by 10. And you're making a great load of money, right? But you still don't know shit about marketing, right? You still don't know shit about branding, because that Jurassic Park dinosaur that you sold today, you didn't create the Jurassic Park brand, which is helping you sell that, right? So then you come back around and you lie to people, and you don't even know you're lying to people, but you lie to people and tell them you know how to market, you know how to brand. But no, you don't know how to market. What you know how to do is show people receipts that you make a lot of money and convince them that you know what you're talking about, and therefore they should buy your book or your course or whatever, right? But technically, you don't know anything, which is why when people bought my book, they go, yo, this is wild. This is crazy. You know, Dominate Twitter, I'm talking about. And like all these money people, money Twitter people, most of them have purchased this book from me. The others have gotten it third hand through somebody else who took my work and just reworded it, right?
Yeah. Or the just sharing it in the DMs, exactly. Like, here's your PDF, homie.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. You know, so, but again, why is my work so prolific and theirs is just so bottom? It's because I had to work like 30 years of my life just to acquire that knowledge. And that knowledge came from real life experience. I didn't get it from some book. I didn't get it from Amazon. I didn't, you know, I got that because I launched a brand with 50 Cent. I launched a brand with Carmelo Anthony. I launched a brand with a Mets investor. I've been with 12 different tech companies and helped them launch brands, right? And helped them launch apps. I actually did this. Y'all playing on the internet. Y'all don't actually do this. So I look at it as like, y'all are telling people you know how to market, but you ain't been on Joe Rogan. I've been on Joe Rogan. Why? Because I don't spend all day telling people I know how to market. I just market. I don't spend all day telling people I know branding. I just practice branding. So then people ask me how you do that. I'm like, yo, you can buy my book. It's right there. I'll tell you how I did it. But that's from real life experience. But again, it comes back to like, this is my love hate with capitalism, right? A lot of bullshit is created in capitalism just for the dollar. Like I said, you got some dude selling a dinosaur on Amazon. How is that dinosaur changing the world? Like, go create a product or a brand or an idea or something that's going to help somebody. Mm. Now, I get it. That's going to help you. But the marketplace is full of people getting rich off of selling stuff that doesn't push humanity forward. That's why Ted Kaczynski was completely on point when he wrote that document, right?
Yeah. Totally on point. People should read that. People should read it. And maybe not like come to the conclusion that you should blow people up because of it, but like it was pretty spot on in terms of like diagnosing the problem and what was going to happen because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we are out here and we're practicing capitalism, we have to ask ourselves, what are we producing? Right. Like, so I produced a book, Dominate Twitter. That's supposed to help people. And I regret writing that book and putting it out.
Don't you charge like $150 or something for that book now?
Yeah. I don't want the common people I don't want common people having that knowledge. They shouldn't have it. It's just, it's price not for filter, everyone. Yeah. But you know, the only reason why I wrote that book was because I wanted to make it easier to get a job. Okay. And I knew that if by writing this book, because I was in marketing and branding, right? So if I go and I say, hey, and this is what I actually did, I'd show up to job interviews with tech startups and I'd be like, hey, how you doing? I'm Brian Sharp. Da, da, da. Here's my book. And I just handed my book and I got the job just like that, right? Because they go, oh, this guy's serious. And he gave me a gift. Nobody's came to the interview with gifts. Right. And I even came with like giveaways from when I was an artist. I'd come with like slippers and hats and keychains from Jägermeister. So I'm coming with like goodies and my book I wrote. And so now they're asking me questions about my book. And before we leave, in their mind, they position me as an authority on the subject of marketing, because the people you brought up here ain't never wrote no book on marketing. So I wrote that book to get a job. The funny thing is, after writing the book, I no longer needed the job because I started exploding, right? And and the book was providing me some income. So it became like this necessity. But if I had to do it over, I wouldn't have wrote the book. I'll be honest with you, right? I wish I could pull it back, but it's kind of like, it's almost like that duty thing. Like, yeah, it's going to fall into the wrong hands, but there's a lot of people who need this to help them start a business, right? So they can create that new nonprofit that's actually going to create something great in this world. So they can create that new piece of technology that's going to do something good in this world, right? But then the other book, right? My masculinity book, like it started out, like I was younger and I was like I said, I was a ladies' man. And I thought it was going to be like a pickup artist book. But as I got older, and I always told myself, I said, yo, I'm never going to write this book. I wanted to write this book for over a decade. I said, I'm never going to write this book until I can prove that I can have a stable relationship with my girl. Because my relationship with my girl was just unstable. We're just always fighting and arguing. And I just couldn't understand, like, you know, what is it? And then when I realized it was me and how I operated in my masculinity, I could control her femininity. That's when I was like, okay, I'm ready to write this book now, because now I can actually help people. So then I wrote that. Then I wrote the Patriot Report. I wrote the Patriot Report because I'm looking at the internet and I'm looking at people trusting the government. And I'm like,
why you do that?
are you familiar with the history of your government and their relationship with money and war? Okay, let me go do the research, because people only respect thoroughly good research, you know, and documentation. So I went and did all the research and the documentation. I wrote the book, and that was my motivation for that. So, you know, money is like maybe 20% of my motivation, because if I wanted to do the money thing, I could do a lot of things for money because I'm really super intelligent. I could start up a channel reviewing movies, right? Reviewing TV shows or reviewing documentaries. And it could be way more lucrative, right? I wouldn't have shut down my blog. That was the reason why I got the 50 Cent gig, right? Because I had an entertainment blog and we got invited to the 50 Cent situation because we covered it, right? We were one of the biggest blogs out there. You know, I was getting press releases sent to us from TV personalities and invited to all the industry parties. So before the 50 Cent thing, I was already being invited to the parties because I was media. And then I shut the blog down. Completely got rid of it. Biggest mistake of my life, by the way. Could have been, you know, by itself, it could have been a six-figure generating, you know, entity without me touching it, just annually, right? Because I was in the entertainment industry. And I shut it down because I no longer wanted to feed people that. I was like, this is not good. I don't want to feed people garbage, right? Like this whole entertainment world is a distraction. Like entertainment literally means distract the mind, right? So I didn't want to distract people's minds. I wanted to focus their minds. So I got rid of that because that's where I was going in my life. I regret it, you know, because I was going through that spiritual awakening and whatnot, because I'm like, I could have used that money right now. But at the same time, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I'm glad I did, because I don't think I'd be the same person I am now. But we have to think about, what is our purpose, man? And after we do something for money, what do we do after that? Right. So you did your Amazon thing. You made all these great dollars and whatnot. What are you going to do now? Are you going to continue making Amazon? Are you going to create an entity that changes the world with that money? Or are you just going to just disappear? Which is fine. Like, you know, you can just disappear and do your thing with your family and just worry about your own family. I'll never fault anybody for doing that. But I can't respect you. I only respect people who understand it is their duty to push humanity forward. Because that's how I feel. That's my subjective view. Humanity is supposed to help humanity. And anybody that's not dedicated to helping humanity, I think is a hindrance to the rest of us. You're just a leech off of our energy and our tax dollars. You know, you're breathing our air. Contribute, you know, contribute. Bring something forward and stop just pushing, oh, get money, get money, get money. No, it's bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. You know, there's a guy out there who you also know. I've had a couple conversations with him. His name's Andrew Tate. And the first time I talked to him, the war room situation that he has was just a glimmer in his eye. And I asked him, I was like, you know, you've got all this notoriety and stuff, but what are you going to do with it? Like, are you going to do something good? And he was, you know, he said, you know, like, I don't really feel any responsibility to anybody. What do I care about them for? But he did end up setting up this thing. And the reason I bring him up is because, you know, you can say whatever you want about the way that that dude makes money, but the way that he lives his life, like if you were going to have $20 million in the bank, like probably 8 out of 10 dudes would want to be living the life that he's living. And he's actually living it. And he's been a kickboxer and now he's got the cars and he's got the ladies and he's got the business and he's got the brotherhood. And so he's actually doing this thing in the war room. I know some people in it. They say they take a lot of value or derive a lot of value out of it. And so like, you know, you said something like
he's lying though.
Well, you can touch on that in a second. The only thing I'm trying to get out is and he plays a character on the internet, and I've pointed that out to a million people. But you know, this guy, he set up this thing, and now these people are empowered. And you can say anything you want. And you said, you know, like, what are you doing for money? Is it adding value to the world? And maybe right now it isn't. Maybe your dinosaur isn't adding value to the world. But like, if you're going to get all this money, if you're going to extract all that value out of the world, if you pool it, it just turns into poison. It's got to move through you and move into something else. And you got to be a steward for that. So if you're going to extract money from losers, like Tate's going to do, you know, if you're going to extract money from the bottom of the earth, you better do something amazing with it, because otherwise you're just another slumlord, right? And maybe like if there were slumlords who actually improved the slums, there wouldn't be the opportunity for there to be the next slumlord. And so I just kind of wonder.
I don't believe him when he says he doesn't care about pushing humanity forward. He lying. That's like his bravado masculinity thing trying to talk, but. He's not like Gary V. He's not like who's the other cat that's always like putting out get money with his Ferrari behind them commercials with the glasses. I forget, but you know, there's a lot of get money cats out here, and they say, "Hey, you know, I got a new way you can make money, and it's not real estate; it's this and." Sign up now and you can get paid too. And I'm washing my Ferrari. And he's not that, because those guys, I believe, are fraudulent. Tate, if you listen to him speak, he be speaking with passion.
Yeah.
And people that speak with passion care. You ever hear him talk about somebody? Like the other day, I saw him on a podcast with somebody I follow. And he was talking about dudes who, you know, basically just aren't living up to their potential, right? And he started speaking with like this extreme contempt. Guys that are just about getting money, they'll usually, what they say is there's a thing where it's like you make people feel good about their misgivings, right? That's one of those hacks to getting, you know, the get rich.
For sure, like selling a Kirby vacuum.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like basically what you would say is it's okay that you don't have purpose. It's okay. You know, you'll find it one day. Call me, you know, I'm, you know, the richest guy, you know, buy my course, right? They'll assuage you. He ain't assuaging nobody. He is literally saying, no, you are scum if you're not living up to your potential. And I believe it's because he cares.
I've pulled people over and over.
A lot of people.
Yeah, that's my point.
I've seen people go into that war room and be better off. I can't say the war room is a great product or a poor product, is a scam or is not a scam, because I've heard things on both sides. All I can say is I've seen at least one individual that I personally know work with him and is better off now. Whether it's because of his relationship with Tate or the war room, I don't know. But I believe he does have something good to contribute to the world. And I think his content does contribute something valuable to the world. He's not selling bullshit, right?
Yeah.
He's selling some cryptocurrency things and he's selling some stock market things. But the world right now needs masculinity and he's selling that. And that's something we need.
Well, you know, he's a great sounding board for somebody's perspective. And you just like those are the points I would hope people would see about the guy. It's why I've been telling people, like, I learn a lot from that guy about, about the way businesses work, about the way that high level things work, because he's just showing you in real time what he's doing. And it's like, oh, well, this is great information.
Yeah.
And I've reached out to him a couple times.
I can't follow him. I can't consume his content. He's not my cup of tea, but, we're two titans. So sometimes, like, I can't consume somebody else's. I can't consume somebody that is. I got to consume somebody like older than me, like way older than me, like Walter E. Williams, Thomas Sowell. You know, I need some Marcus Aurelius. Like, I go get my inspiration from dead people. You know what I mean? Rothbard. Like, I study old stuff, some forbidden books, but I don't really study anybody that's here today. Like, you know, okay, Thaddeus Russell, I would say I would study under him, but he's like a professor. So, like, being a student under a professor is kind of like, you know, intuitive, right? But like, you know, even like Jordan Peterson, like I got into Jordan Peterson, and then, like, I think, like, maybe after like a week, I was just like over him. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, all right, this is definitely not for my age group. This is definitely for some young kids, some young boys.
Clean,
like, it was my
clean your room, you know, buddy.
Not for my age demographic, right? Like Billy Red Horse, I could consume him because he's older than me, right?
Yeah.
But if you're younger than me, I can't. Unless you're giving me like specific advice on a very specific niche, I'm not listening to you.
Well, look, man, I kind of got the conversation derailed talking about Tate there for a second. It was just a good opportunity to reflect on some stuff. But what I want, look, we're almost an hour in here, and I don't want to take up all of your time. And I find people's attention span starts running out at about an hour. So what I'd like to do is, you said something very important here, and I want to kind of highlight the principle and then maybe have you close us out with that, and then we can say our salutations and stuff. But what you said is, you don't consume content from people who, let's just say, don't have the experience necessary to exceed your wisdom enough to make it worthwhile to consume their content. Okay.
Right. Perfect.
But people are coming to you to be that guy for them. And so what I would maybe like for you, because we've talked about you stepping in the role of leadership and why I appreciate what you're doing there and how that's helped you foster a good community. And maybe we didn't touch on that enough, which is your job as the leader is what determines the quality of your community. And you talked about losing a good portion of a community as you became a different kind of person. But what I want you to maybe talk about is, how should a person, and the people who are coming to you are probably, you know, a little bit younger than you or around your same age and are looking, how should a person curate the people that they're looking to as an example and making sure that they're not getting fed snake oil from some grifters, or making sure that they're not getting misled by some the like irrelevant information in a story problem rather than focusing in on the relevant details? How can a person, a young person who's coming to Hotep Jesus, improve their ability to make sense of their information curators?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. Because it's levels, right? It's like, it's levels and there's taste. You know, you might consume some content because it just tastes good, right? It's just, it satisfies you, maybe because it's entertaining or whatever. Or you like the way the message is being delivered. But knowing someone is a grifter requires a tremendous amount of social IQ. And it's hard to teach that. And it requires a tremendous amount of knowledge for yourself, right? Like, you first have to have some knowledge to know somebody says some bullshit. You know, like, something comes across my timeline, I go, that's some bullshit. Because I know a lot, right? And sometimes I see people who repeat bullshit and I don't correct them. I'm way past the point of correcting people. You'd have to come to me and say, is this correct? And I'd be like, nah, that's some bullshit. But otherwise, I'm gonna just let you go on your path and let you figure out this bullshit. Unless it just happens during one of my streams where I say some shit and just exposes some bullshit, right? it might be relevant. You know, for example, like there's a lot of bullshit with history. And I went over this on my channel about the real reason for freeing the slaves. Real reason for freeing the slaves had nothing to do with any of the mainstream ideas, you know, such as, you know, to be nicer to black people or to, you know, because, you know, the inflation or what's the other excuse that they give? I don't know, but that's just not the real reason. And, you know, what's the real reason World War II was fought? What's the real reason World War I was fought? All these wars, for example, Revolutionary War. Who was it? I'm blanking out. But one of the forefathers would tell you straight up, Revolutionary War wasn't fought over no tax with UK. It was fought because they wouldn't let them create their own currency. And that's two completely different things. You know, saying somebody's taxing you and saying somebody won't let you create your own currency, I mean, that's the biggest tax. Not allowing me to create I have to use your money. Oh no, we got to fight now. You bugging. We are an independent entity and we are going to be using our own money. And that's what that war was fought over. But that's not what you hear in school, right? So when I see people say things, you first have to acquire knowledge to know it's bullshit, which is why when I speak, I try not to speak a lot on many different subjects, unless I've dug deep into it and I found some secret, because I too may be repeating some bullshit. And I have in the past. We all have. Right. Because this is the mainstream thought, and you thought that was the truth until you get your bubble burst. Right. It's just like, oh, wait, that wasn't true. But you've told 1,000 people the same lie because everybody believed that same lie. So, you know, knowing that I've been lied to since a young child, now it's just like, if I haven't researched something extensively, I ain't talking about it.
So you got to get ass advice.
Here's one indicator to tell if somebody is a grifter or not. And this is in my new book.
And what's the name of that book again?
I actually don't know. It's got like 30 working titles. I change it every time somebody asks me. Right now it's the left versus right dilemma. I don't know. I'm just, you know, but that's kind of like where the book is going. But, you know, if you want to tell, you know, if somebody's a grifter, they always make emotional charged statements, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is sensationalized, right? They respond to everything that comes out of the media. Everything has a response. Like yesterday, Biden called some media person a son of a bitch, and I just scrolled right back.
Who cares?
Yeah, all right. I didn't call people son of a bitch, like whatever. But people thought that was credible enough for them to go and run to Instagram and make a video about it. And it's just like, you grifting, right? Either that, or you're just so low level of a thinker that you thought that shit was newsworthy, but that shit ain't newsworthy. Biden saying something, at least a million things that Biden has done that you can talk about, like the OSHA thing, that might be more important, right? But you grifting. The other thing or did I already say that? So it's the emotionally charged and sensationalization is just always, everything's always gloom and doom with these grifters. Like, oh my God, this person, they're always just finding something wrong with the world and then talking about that. And then they provide no solutions, right? Grifter ain't give you no solutions.
No solutions.
Yeah, you ain't or no good solutions, right? Even if they do provide a solution, it's always some bullshit. Nothing's
Build
ever really
better or whatever.
Yeah. Nothing's ever really like thought out with original thought. They've never created any plans. They've never really built anything, right? So this is how you start to see, you know, this person's a grifter. But usually everything just comes back to emotion. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. I don't like that. And let's just respond to everything that comes out of the media. So you have to judge what's important and what's a distraction, because 99% of the stuff that comes out of the media is a distraction. And I do this before all of my streams. I go down the trending topics before we start the stream, and I go distraction, 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 distraction. Oh, this looks funny. And I'll like give my 2 cents on it, and I go distraction, right? Like everything's a distraction. So like, what is, so now after we filtered out what's a distraction, what's important? Mm-hmm. Now, is your grifter talking about what's important, and is that their thesis? Is that their premise? Is that their focus? Because if it's not, and they're just all over the place, just talking about anything and everything that the media is coming at, then hey, you probably got a grifter.
Those are some good keys right there. And, you know, I didn't really get a chance to talk to you about that bone I had to pick with you about the grifties. and that's okay. I mean,
what's the bone?
I expected it. I expected the sabotage. I mean,
what's the bone?
It was coming. I mean, it was coming.
What?
Well, you know, Once you turn the goon squad off, I couldn't cheat my way to the top. But it's a grifting contest, bro. You can't not let the man grift his way to the top of the grifting contest.
What?
It's like a meta grift. It's like, I don't even grift people. I'm not even asking for your money. I just want your vote. That's the grift. And you know, look,
but your team was astroturfing. Your team was astroturfing my app. Which I thank you for, because
we didn't ask him to.
I'm just saying your team did it though. You know, you got a little goon squad and they astroturf you to the top, right? And I go, he's manipulating my app. I don't like that. I don't like people playing with my shit. So I installed some measures. I had my guy install some measures, and now people can't grift the app. Like there's somebody right now trying to manipulate the app, right? And they keep bumping Meghan Markle and Prince Harry to the top. I'm like, all right, I'll fix you. So I rigged the system so they can't get bumped to the top. Like, there's no problem. Like, you can grift.
I mean, I nominated myself again, but
I seen it. I saw it.
We'll like, see you how can it goes.
Grift, but you're not going to grift off me, right? That's how I go. Like, you grift up, but you ain't grifting hope that Jesus. Hell no.
Well, I just want people to know that there's like an asterisk next to the Grifty Awards. And it's Hotep Jesus saying you can't grift Hotep Jesus.
Absolutely not. Not happening.
Well, look, man, this has been a great conversation. And I think if people really listen to what you said in this conversation, there's a lot of really wise pearls that you've dropped. And hopefully they weren't cast before swine tonight. You know, thanks once again for coming on. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the people before we sign off?
Subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/hotepjesus. I give out big brain content every day. So go get that and play chess. We got to make chess. Yeah, we got to make chess the number one sport in the world.
Make chess great again.
Make chess great again.
That's a great place to leave it. You know where to find him. Twitter, Hotep Jesus. Go subscribe to his YouTube. He does drop daily excellent content. And go follow him on Twitter. Go buy his books. $167 right to your doorstep. And if you are willing to pay it, then you probably deserve the knowledge. And with that, this has been Uncommon with Hotep Jesus. I'm Chance Lunsford, and we're out.